The Life of Mary Cromer, a novel, written and narrated by Virginia Weir. Author's note. In 2014, while looking through archives of family papers at the University of Iowa, I came across an old faded folder in which I found a stack of poems written by my great aunt, Mary Cromer. I had not known that Mary wrote poetry. In fact, I knew very little about her except some stories my father told me. This book is a work of fiction inspired by imagining the life of Mary Cromer. The poems herein are all hers. Anamosa, 1906. Even as an infant, she knew the substance of each sister as they passed her among themselves. Carol was sturdy, Helen wispy, Ruth was round and small. Each of them had their own scent, too. Carol like grass and sweat, Helen like soap from laundry days, and Ruth, whose scent changed from roses to lavender depending on what scents Mother had on her dresser. And their touches were different. Carol, 11 years old, held baby Mary calmly, lightly. When Helen held her, she felt an unsureness. Ruth, at 4 years old, could only hold the baby while sitting down, but was the most expressive of the sisters, cooing and stroking her until Mary felt pressed and began to cry.
"Mary, Mary, quite contrary,"
Ruth sang the new song she had learned.
"That's enough, Ruth," Mother said, and picked Mary up and put her in the carriage or her crib.
Although Mother was also there from the beginning, her presence was subtler, passing, unfamiliar.
"Take the baby, would you, Helen?"
And Helen would hold Mary and try to feed her from the bottle, but Mary didn't want it. Mother couldn't stand her fussing.
"It's all that baby does is fuss," she said,
weary of them all, of moving from one two-horse town to another, as Emory contracted with one school and another. This town, Anamosa, and his new job at the penitentiary looked to be long-term, and she told them all they may as well get used to it. From wherever Mary was in the house, in her crib upstairs, or her chair in the kitchen, or her pen in the living room, she could hear their voices, all of them, the sounds of directing and chastising and cajoling and teasing. A sudden cold swooshed over her as the door opened and shut. Then the low, halting voice was there. He would walk by her pen and pinch her cheek, churning the cold air with his movements. She did not know whether she liked his touch, and she did not know for sure how he smelled, for he rarely picked her up. "Father," the sisters said. In the other room, different sounds rose up, the tick of the clock on the mantel, the clink of forks and knives as they ate, voiceless noise, tension where the voices had been, or sometimes calm. The stove door would clank open and a burst of warmth came to her in the pen. Then it was warmer, and they were outside often. On the softness, a soapy smell, familiar. Outstretched, an arm that moved and could move her. Mary bent and pushed, pushed and bent until, oh, the shock of an entirely different view. Breathless, blue, blue overhead, so deep with streaks and puffs of white. She reached up with her arms and grabbed her feet. She rocked on the itchy green that smelled like her sister, immersed and lost in the new view and her whole self, and then a shadow hovered over her, furry and strange-smelling. It sniffed her, and then out came its long, long tongue to lick her face from chin to bald head, a frightening and new exhilaration. Someone called out, "Spiff, get over here!" And then, "I'm so sorry, Leela. That dog is harmless, but he does what he does." And before she could let out a scream, there was another familiar high voice. "Mother, Mary turned herself over." Mary felt Mother lean over her. Her small arms unclenched her feet and rose to be picked up. But Mother stood up, hands on her hips. "Lord, here we go," she said, wearily. Then the scream that had been held back inside Mary's body like a sneeze came out, full force.